Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is Keeping It Real on Purpose, and I am your host, Edna White. And today, we are going to be talking about healing that trauma after faith or religion fails us. Today, I have a most amazing guest who I've just fell in love with, who is going to be talking about this recovery and her story. So I want you to sit back and relax, grab a pen, maybe even some coffee, because you might hear some tea coming around the corner. I would like to introduce to you Crystal Hamilton, who is none other than the author of this amazing book here. Now, Drowning in Doctrine, she is a therapist, and she's lived the Mormon faith. So I'm excited for her to get on and tell us all about this experience. Welcome to the show, Crystal.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
All right. So you are a licensed mental health counselor and a survivor of religious trauma from the Mormon faith. Mm-hmm. Tell us about a little bit of that.
About growing up Mormon and becoming a therapist?
Well, you know what? Answer this question.
Okay.
You ready? We already know each other, audience. So, we're comfortable now. How do you show up in the world?
I want to be a person where I want people to be attracted to my message. I don't want to force my message of religious trauma and you have to leave a church or you can't believe this way or you have to change your faith. Not at all. I'm not trying to say that at all. Right. I am sharing my story. And if my story helps another person because they may have felt oppressed, that maybe they felt the same way as a woman, your only goal was, I was raised, get married, have children. That's it. You don't do anything else. So that's what I want, to share my story. And if people are attracted to that, if they're attracted to learning ways to overcome religious trauma, then I'm a resource.
Yeah, that's good. I want to tell you, and like I told you earlier, and the audience, I enjoy this book so much that I had to write her myself because she kind of got lost in the email. And I was like, I enjoy this book. And audience, you guys know me. I talk about religion failing me as well. And it was just such a great bond that this book just came in and kind of validated what I was feeling and the anxiety and the confusion around all of it. Your memoir is called Drowning in Doctrine. And so as the cover looks like, there's a little brook here. And you know you can drown in water. So just so you know that. What's the breaking point that made you realize the system had failed you and drove you to share the story?
Couple things are popping up in my head.
It's all right. Pop them out.
So when I realized that the church wasn't for me, getting married, going against my intuition. So I was 17, a senior in high school, and getting married because I was having sex. And on our wedding day, I knew this was not for me.
Yeah.
The whole day I was like, run. I'm in my wedding gown. Run. Like my intuition was just screaming, and I couldn't do it. I just couldn't do it. And then about 25 in college, I was going to University of Oregon, and it just kind of clicked where, I don't know how much you know about the Mormon faith, but.
Well, I learned a lot. You know, I told you about the Mormon mafia show.
So Mormons believe that there's three heavens. right?
Yeah.
So the T-leshel, the ter-leshel, and the C-leshel, and there's different levels in between them. And that's the doctrine that you have to get married in the temple. And when you die, your husband calls you by the secret name and he takes you up to heaven, right? In the celestial kingdom where you can be gods of another world.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, so that's just a crash course of that. Well,
yeah, that's a crash.
If you don't get married in the temple, then you can't reach the highest level. Okay. So when I was 25, I was like, well, my parents could just come on down to the lowest kingdom and hang out with me and then go back up there. So, I was like, that's fine.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, but you think about it, your mind can't even grasp that. So you think, you know, it's easy peasy, you know? That's so real. That's so real right there.
Yeah.
Wow. So Crystal, explain to us what is religious trauma.
Well, it's not a term in the DSM-5. So it's
And what's the DSM-5?
DSM-5 is the diagnostic manual that clinicians use. So typical diagnosis like depression and anxiety and OCD, familiar stuff that we know, schizophrenia. Right. So clinicians use this book and to look at the number to bill insurance.
Right. Okay.
So it's not in the DSM. Mm-hmm. And there's very limited research on it.
Okay.
So I've just been kind of really digging into it. So Marlene Winwell, she is a PhD down in California, and she coined the term religious trauma syndrome.
Right.
And it's psychological, emotional issues that we have from religion. So Marlene Winwell, I don't know, she's Christian. I'm not sure which sect, but she has this whole book that helped me put words to what I was feeling.
Okay. Yeah. Well, you know, I've experienced religious trauma as well. I think from the age of 18, 19 till about my 40s. And I equate it to really related complex trauma related to authority, dogma, and community, because all three of those areas hurt me, like just it emotionally wounded me. It strips away yourself, especially women. Strips away who you were innately supposed to be. Feminine, that's gone. That's out the window. Femininity is out the window. Very, very voluptuous, and that's out the window. That's completely out the window. You had to be just plain and there. So it washes away that. You know, and don't cry. Don't get emotional. You can only get emotional in church. You can't get emotional anywhere else.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Wow. You can't get emotional there. You can only get emotional in church, never somewhere else. Yeah. You can't associate with anyone else but that group of people. Mm-hmm. Right? You can't, not even another type of religion. You can't, no. You're the only ones. So it teaches hate. It teaches separatism. And even if your family member is not compliant with the dogma, you have to separate from them, even if it's your child.
Oh my gosh.
So religious trauma is so complex, and I still feel a lot of it. And I was talking about this, and maybe you can chime in, Crystal. I was an assistant to the pastor for a number of years. Then I became the assistant, like a assistant pastor. And so one day I was doing something, and I remember taking the Bible and looking at it, and I was like, wait a minute. It highlighted some areas. And do you know, each year there was like each, I would write down what year, because I had to read the Bible, whatever he wanted. And each year, the same scripture was there and had a different year on it. It was the weirdest thing. So I said, we've been repeating the same thing for numerous years. So can you think about 30 years hearing the same thing? Mm-hmm. The grooves in our brain have been so entrenched with whatever dogma.
Yeah.
It has, and I couldn't believe it. I was like, that's why if I was sick, right, I couldn't get to church, I would be even sicker, because it was out of the ordinary. Like I had already, you're supposed to be there. Yeah. And then them saying, this is the only way to, you can't miss church, because if you do, you're going to hell.
Right.
Yeah. Right? Can you?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So that just kind of resonates. The only way I can have a spiritual experience is with the Mormon church.
Yeah.
And I wrote this in the book that, mm-hmm. and this story was used, I want to say, against me for years.
Yeah.
But I was 4 years old. I had a really bad fever. They mm-hmm. were going to take me to the hospital. Mm-hmm. And in the Mormon church, the patriarch, the men, do have like blessed oil, and they put it on your forehead. And my dad gave me a father's blessing. The whole family's around me. And halfway through the blessing, my fever broke and I'm up and I'm running around. And so that's because they believed in the Mormon church. And right. the Mormon God saved me, right? So when I stopped going to church, that's what they would say. They would bring up the story. The church is true. The right. church is right. true because this happened.
Right.
And so I didn't think I could have any spiritual life. I didn't know. I was like, for years, I was like, do I go to a different church? What do mm-hmm. I do then? Do I go to nature? I don't know. I was thinking about Scientology. I'm glad I didn't.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
But then your question earlier, where you said, why did you write this book? And mm-hmm. another spiritual experience that I had was, I was sitting in yoga class a few years ago, and mm-hmm. coming off the tails of infertility treatment.
Right.
And the grief about not able to conceive. And then my MO is to move to a different state. So I'm laying there after yoga. I'm like, so should I move? Should I go to California? Should I go to Arizona? Should I adopt a baby? Should I get, you know, just rattling all this stuff. And clearly, I just heard this voice say, it's not your time.
Yeah. I've heard that too. Yep.
It's not your time. And so I just, and of course I was like, not my time for what? Not to have a baby or not to go to school? Come back.
Right.
Gonna come back. But it was like, stop effing running. Just stop running and sit here and just sit here in the moment. Right. Yeah. And it took a couple more years. But now, you know, My business has progressed. I, you know, mm-hmm. wrote this book, and then we have a grandson that we're caring for.
Right.
So if I would have just picked up and moved and blown up my life,
yep,
then these blessings wouldn't have happened.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So the core toxic feeling, I would say, that came out of all of that, and I think we experienced, and that I read in your book, was shame.
Mm.
In your opinion, how did it really affect you, you know, with being probably perfect and then the strict expectations in your upbringing? How did it bring you to where you were self-harming with alcohol, then the depression and the other addictions. How did it play a big piece in that? And what were your thoughts as this was happening?
Shame just engulfed me, right? Yeah. And I was going to grad school in 2011, and Brené Brown, right? She's huge social worker on Shame. And I remember just bawling with her TED Talk. And I was like, once again, somebody giving me language.
Yeah.
This is what's happening.
Yeah.
There's, a lot of shame in having, being attracted to girls, and that I'm going to go to hell, or I'm a child molester because people are child molesters, you know. So shame around that, shame around having premarital sex, and then shame of I'm not Mormon, so other people's aren't being saved. That's my problem because that's just a way to control, right? So a lot of shame about that.
Shame is deep, shame is deep. And this is a audience, this is a really difficult topic. And I was looking in your book, and one thing that I love about what you've done, and maybe you realize it, but what I realized took from it, is that each title that you gave was sort of like a roadmap. And I just loved it, even though you had your stories in there, have the family origin, feeling the pressure, foreseen consequences, all of them were like little roadmaps, and they all represented something. Mm-hmm. And even when you talked about Baron, and I was like, wow. So I could even take that as to be, say, I wasn't progressing anywhere. And I felt, because I felt barren when nothing, like I was going to church, doing everything I was supposed to do. I was one of the first ones to create a vacation Bible school in the community. All the people kind of came and brought their children out. I had like 30 kids at a time. Families wanted to stay in the church with me. They enjoyed the vacation Bible school. I had, I was barren. I was felt empty. And this, when I was reading your story about you, your story about barren, I thought, for years I was barren. I felt so empty. I was like, it was just like I was doing it just to do it. Like there was nothing. It was like I was a robot. That's what I felt like. Like I was standing outside of myself and seeing myself do this. And there was no gratification, no excitement about it, nothing.
Yeah.
And I love how, audience, you need to get this book, because I don't think you even realized it. Each part is so relatable, but you can actually see yourself in that roadmap and how you change it around to say, and this is what I learned about. I had to grasp this part. Even in your weakest moments, you gave us a roadmap. Mm-hmm. So you kind of broke the doctrine. And I'm forever grateful for that, because now I see, that you've done it. Can you tell me, was this table of contents something you planned?
Well, I worked with a ghostwriter, and she, Heather Ina, she's not a ghostwriter if I'm saying her name, but I definitely, the creativity part of the book, she's just a phenomenal creative writer. So she guided most of that. Yeah. But when you brought up Baron, because there was a different title, and I was like, when you were talking about Baron, and I said, no, I want the title to be Baron, it's how I felt for so many years. And just like religious trauma, there's no research. No one's talking about infertility. Right? Mm-hmm. It's like a dirty little word. Mm-hmm. No one talks about about reproductive trauma, right?
Mm-hmm.
And once again, just like religious trauma, when I was going through infertility, I found three books on dealing with infertility, and they're all by counselors and doctors, yeah. You know?
Yeah.
So I was in grad school. I'm looking through loss and grief books, and I'm just like trying to hold on. I'm like, Jennifer Aniston had infertility. So I'm just trying to find like celebrities. I just reaching out for hope, and I just didn't have anything. And it was a good 5 years. And during that time, I'd already done therapy. I'd done the 12 steps. I thought it was pretty healthy. And if I would have had a baby in 2013, I would not have the healing and the growth that I have now, right? That it was so painful and just broke my heart so much. And that I would have these ingrained thoughts. Well, it's because you're not Mormon.
Right. I was going to ask you, do you think that ingrained thought pushed it even more?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And then once again, another layer I get to take off, right?
Yes.
Oh man, I was like, I already dealt with this.
Yeah, no, it keeps coming. Yeah. It's shadows. It's shadows. Like, you know, it's a lot of shadows. Like it digs at you, you know, it really digs at you. It really does.
I love how you bring up the table of contents, right? Because it's just chapter headings. It really is like that roller coaster, right? And there's a lesson. There's a silver lining.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I was reading it, I read the contents last, you know, I want you to know that. And I was like, oh gosh, this book is so beautiful. Like, you know, it's just so beautiful. But then I was like, oh, this is a freaking roadmap. Mm-hmm. So audience, do a favor for me. Don't read the table of contents first. Go through the entire book, get the lessons out of it. Have your pen or a highlighter like I've done with this one. Okay, like I did the highlights here.
I do that too.
and then go to the table of contents, and you'll see that there's a roadmap. It was so right there for me.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, this is a roadmap. Excellent. So I don't know if you really even realized that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you did, but I'm giving that to you right now, Crystal. So if someone is listening and they feel utterly paralyzed by the fear of starting this journey, what is the single most important first step they can take today?
Trust your intuition.
Ooh. Ooh. Oh, that's heavy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's really
having the courage to trust your intuition.
Yes. That's even heavier.
To follow through. Yeah. I'm trying to get more sentence. Courage to follow through on my intuition. That's it.
Yes. That's, you have to have that courage, because if you don't, you're going to listen to that grooved part, that part that's, you know, you used to follow in that habit, and you're going to listen to it. When I broke away from the church, and I tried to do it as the Bible had said, if you know, you get somebody in line, and this is what I believed, you know. And I said, okay, God, you got to set this up for me, because it's time for me to go. Because it was just calling me. It's somewhere I have to do, things I have to do. And so it just so happened that Sunday, I'm in the back and I'm counting money with the deacon and sit. And I was like, you know, Pastor, I want to talk to you. So, okay. So he sits, and then I said, I'm so glad you're here, Deacon. You could stay. And so, you know, you have to have a witness when you have an ought against someone. You know, that was what I believed. So it was set up that way. I was like, thankful for God for that. All right. So I'm explaining to them, I haven't been happy for years. You haven't been happy. And he's like, I don't even believe that. I said, if you're supposed to be the shepherd or the father of us, you know, you should know when any of your sheep get sick, anything happens to them. Why is it that the one that's closest to you, you don't know that I'm miserable? And that's when it started to open up. And then I'm talking about Joyce Myers. And I said, Joyce Myers feeds the hungry. And she goes to other countries and she's helping people through her message. It may be plain, it may be not, you know, screaming and yelling, but why is she going to hell? Because she wears pants. And all these things. And he couldn't answer me. And he said to me, the Bible said, you know, you can't put one leg into the other. I said, and at that time I had sat and I had read, I had literally read everything and got so much clarity. And I said, no, if you're talking about Leviticus, that was, they didn't want women to go to war because they didn't want them to put war clothes on. If you know anything about Leviticus, it's a war country, war area. And he was like, how do you know this stuff? Huh. So right there, I said, oh, I'm not smart. And I says, I studied. And I, again, the Bible says, study to show thyself approved. What I want to know is, why come you don't know this?
Yeah.
So I go back to Joyce Myers, why is she going to hell? And he said to me, a pound of this and a pound of that. I said, what scripture is that? And I was really serious. I wasn't being facetious.
Yeah.
And he was like, got so mad at me. He said, so what do you want to do? I said, I think it's time for me to go. I hear God calling me to something bigger and better. You're never going to be anything, because number one, you were married and you divorced and you married somebody else and you divorced them. You're not going to be able to do anything. God only comes through me. This is what he's saying to me. So, you know, and I said, and you're supposed, and I called you Bishop, my father, and you're going to hurt me this way? I left out of there, never came, went back. And I spent 6 months dismantling everything that I was taught. I literally, me and another friend, we bought concordances. We bought, that's how we found out about King James. He was a king, but he's married, but he had like 8 kids, but he was gay.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he was gay. And we didn't know that either. And we were like, wait, what? And all the things that they told us, which was that dogma, was totally the opposite. Totally the opposite. And my intuition just started growing. You know, that's our innate preacher. I could hear it because now I wasn't listening to the complexities of the noise. I could hear it because it never is forceful. It's always very quiet.
Yeah.
And your book awakened so much in me. And I'm going to tell you, audience, you guys already know this. I was offered by another publisher a paid opportunity to create a book about my trauma. Wow. And the best way to even start to write, I've written a lot of it, is to hear. Because I'm alone in this. I'm going to tell you, I think I've read one other person's book about religious trauma, but it was still religious. And I was like, this ain't it. So this is not it. Then when I saw yours, I said, this is it. And I know that's my assignment because so many of us, Black and Brown, and now, you know, Mormon, and even Christians, are stuck in this rut of religion and it's no longer useful. How do I get out of it? And women come up to me all the time and say, how did you do it?
Oh, wow.
And they say it to me and I'm thinking they're talking about something else. Cause I'm all over the place. I'm like, I'm everywhere. And I'm like, what? You know, what are you talking about? And I said, are you talking about church? And I was like, wow.
How is that with the African American community, though?
It's
getting heavy. A lot of backlash.
I'm gonna tell you something. People try to reconform me, right? They try to re-initiate me and back in. You know, a lot of people that I was friendly with within the church, they don't say much to me. When I first came out, when I first got out of there, I could tell you I had my hair was on a number one. I just came from China. I was freeze and burn, you know, I was freeze and burn, you know, and they couldn't believe that I was like this. And they would say to me, oh, you're against God. I said, mm-mm, not at all. Not at all. I'm against your God. That's what I'm against, is the teachings that you taught us about God. That's not really God. That's not really God. That's not God. And they try to re-induct me a lot.
Okay. Save me.
They don't say much to me. Some of the women admire me and they eventually come out. They eventually take steps to move out. Like when I left my church, literally every woman left there. They said they couldn't even stay without me being there. And I thought that was, you know, I didn't know that I was being that type of leader per se. But, you know, of course, God knew, you know. Yeah. And they told me, and I see them to this day, and they say, I couldn't stay because you're the reason why we were there. And, you know, it's freeing, but it's also very scary. And the thing is, if you keep a little bit of it, you keep all of it. I had to literally throw it away. Mm. I had to throw it away and never open it again. Because it was in I remembered a lot of it, just like you do, right? You remember a lot of it. But I couldn't even keep remembering it because I would do it.
Yeah.
I would rely on it. Ugh. You know, and if you keep a little bit of it, you're going to be stuck still there. So I had to get rid of all of it. I had to literally lock myself away, me and my friend, and we both left two different churches at this, like literally simultaneously. We didn't even know we were doing it. And we stayed in her house 6 months in her house. We turned her great room into a study room and we studied for 6 months without, you know, but we unstudied what we learned. And it took that long, but then it was in our nervous system. Mm-hmm. It was in our emotions. It was another complexity, you know? It was, so those things take place, you know? And then apologizing to everybody. You know, my kids that I drug there, you know? Uh-huh. Apologizing to them, you know, and saying, yeah, no, this isn't it, you know? So it took a lot. It took a lot.
And you went to church at 18. You weren't raised in it, right? So you chose to go.
Yeah. But one beautiful thing I did have is, you know, there's a story about Jesus. He left his parents at 12 and he went out and about. He's a runaway. So I told my kids when they got 12, you can choose, go to church or not, you know. And I said, but you got to stay in the house. You can't be running around everywhere, you know. And I would make sure that they were all right. And, you know, or if they wanted to be with their aunt or whoever, I would make sure they were good, you know. But I gave them a choice and they said, no, we don't want to go anymore.
Oh, wow.
So that was one saving grace about that, you know. And then I was open to music. I loved every type of music. I was open to music. See, in the Black community, you can't listen to like music. And no music is, you know, unless it's bashing somebody, you know, is bad music. If you're being nasty and mean to people, it's no music is bad music because they all come from the same place. Mm-hmm. So you couldn't listen to secular, as they call it, secular music. But music is music. There's no genre for music. You know, there may be for like pop and all of that, you know. Yeah. The type of music. But there's no genre. You know, you had to listen to gospel music. I didn't let them do it. I was like, whatever you want, but as long as it doesn't bash or curse, you know, women, men, anything like that, or say negative things. And I had to listen to it, you know. So I knew a lot about their music. And they knew a lot about my music because I listened to it. It's like, oh, yeah, that. Then if I hear a phrase, because I listen for the words, they don't. They listen for the lyric, you know, the music part. And I was like, oh, no, he's talking about that. No, that's not good, you know. And it's like, oh, I didn't know that. It's like, yeah, because you like the beat. you know. So
you know, the words too.
Yes, it's but the, you know, and yeah. You know, it was difficult, and in the Black community, I know you too. Probably did you had to wear a certain type of clothing?
Well, I had to be modest. Yeah. So no.
Yeah, what does modest mean?
Modest.
I used to ask that question all the time. What does modest mean?
Modest means shirts down, sleeves down to here. Can't, you know, no cleavage over here. Yeah. You know, skirts or shorts down to your knees. Yeah. And then modest. So you don't want to be
revealing.
And because we have to watch out for the guys, right? We don't want to be a temptation for the men.
Right. We don't want them to corral their lust.
Yeah. Yes, because that's my responsibility.
Yeah, it's your responsibility. Yeah. We couldn't wear shoes with open toe or heel out.
Whoa.
So I could tell you that some of the people had foot fetishes. We couldn't show... the dress couldn't be up to your knees or it had to be to your ankles because they, you know, they had leg fetishes too. And I was like, what's the deal with this shirt all the way down here? You know? And I was like, maybe people have wrist issues. You had to have it all the way up here. What else? We couldn't wear jewelry. No jewelry.
Is this Pentecostal?
It's entire, yeah, Pentecostal.
Okay.
Baptist is more lenient. Episcopalian, the same thing, but Pentecostal, apostolic.
Okay.
Even Christian women, even if they wear pantsuits, it's got to be modest. So you couldn't walk, you know, you can wear makeup, but it had to be modest. You had to, instead of wearing, you know, red lipstick like or orange like I'm doing, you could have like your lip color on.
Mm.
You can have like light fingernail polish on, you know, that kind of stuff. You know,
only one ear piercing, no tattoos.
Oh wow, yeah, no, you couldn't have none of that. Couldn't have none of that, and the boys couldn't have long hair. Couldn't have long hair.
In recent years, the Mormon Church has changed that. Yeah. Because when I was a teenager, the prophet said you could only have one earring. And I was so bad because I had a second ear piercing.
I'm like, wow.
Are you serious? So now the garments, I never went through the temple where you wear that special sacred underwear. Mm-hmm. But now it's sleeveless. So it's a big uproar that. It's the doctrine has changed now. Yeah.
Wow.
So the problem is okay.
Yeah, we had those things too. Of course, I loved my earrings. And I was like, one day I just felt like putting them on. I was like, I gotta put my earrings back on. They were small. Yeah. Oh man, they had a whole meeting on me. A whole meeting on a Saturday. I'm like, what's going on? And I love sundresses without sleeves. Oh my God, it was like I did something wrong. I'm like, I'm sweating like a pig. And I got these, I'm not wearing no denim dress all the way to no, I'm not doing it. I'm just not. Sorry. I'm not, and I'm out here working. So I'm out here running with kids. And I have this denim dress on and I'm sweating like a pig. And long sleeves, no. I was like, get me a sundress, call it a day. And it was like I set precedence for every woman in there. They were like, when I was leaving, the first lady begged me, please don't leave. I said, I have to. This is bigger than saving. If you guys can't speak up for yourself, this is bigger than you. And she said to me, you know, you're making precedence for other women. I said, yeah, but we still don't, even if I make the precedence, we still, like, we had to go swimming with, we can wear a bathing suit, but we had to wear a dress on top.
Swimming?
Yeah. Well, and I'm like, do you understand when you're swimming that the water goes under this dress and pulls you down? You understand that, right?
Like the Mormons.
Yes, absolutely. Wow. But the men could go out and wear just trunks. Oh,
they can do whatever they want.
Yeah, do whatever they want. Mm-hmm. It was very strict. It was very, very, very strict. And the day that I knew it for years, but it was already ingrained in me, and I was coming back, and I was more miserable. It was horrible. I was so miserable, mad. I couldn't even, my heart was just, oh, it was bad. And I was, we used to shut in shut in is like on the weekends, like New Year's and on some, every month in the weekends. And we used to fast 3 days without eating. Yeah. And it was the worst ever. I wouldn't let my kids fast. That I'm not doing that, because kids don't know any better. They don't even know what it is. So I wouldn't let them do that. No, you're not going to do that to my kids. My kids are eating. They're eating. Okay, they're eating. They're getting snack, everything. They're getting whatever.
Follow your intuition.
Yes. Yeah. And I wish I would have did it a strong, more, listened to it more, but it was so ingrained in me. I was being submissive, and I thought I was going to hell because they explained that if walking this life was like walking a tightrope. If you go to this side, you fall off and you're going to hell. If you go to this side, you go to fall off. So you got to walk this tight rope all the way to the destination. Can you imagine? Mm. That is the toughest thing, right? Would you say?
Absolutely. And who's making up these rules? The men.
The men are making it.
Were there women that have authority in that church? Women have no authority in the Mormon church.
They only have limited authority. And here's a kicker. My stepfather and my mom came to my church, and he made him head deacon. And I'm like, what? So that was it for me. I was like, what?
Wow.
Are you stinking kidding me? What? That just did it for me. That was over for me. It was just, I was like, and it didn't matter what they did. Didn't matter. But men did. It didn't matter. Mm-hmm. I've seen, as the assistant to the past, I've seen and heard some stuff. I was like, but if women did that, they would be ostracized. They'd be called everything. And literally, when I left, all of them turned their back on me, and I was like, okay, all right. But I was free. I was free. I could literally breathe. At the end.
I had the ability to be a business owner, have employees. That was never taught to me.
No.
That's not something that I was raised, one day you could do this. I'm just kind of fumbling around, mm-hmm. figuring out, I can do this. Oh, I'm strong enough. I don't need a man to do this. Right?
Right. Awesome. Well, we've been talking for a while, but audience, what an incredible, powerful, and raw look at what it truly is. It takes to heal. And Crystal, thank you for sharing your story and your roadmap with us. And we're hopeful to see you again. Well, I know I'm seeing you again, so I don't talk about that. If you want this roadmap to resilience, start with Crystal's book, Drowning in Doctrine. And you can find it and learn about the clinical work at her company. That's what she does, Redefine Family LLC, that she was just talking about, that she didn't know that she could have. And visit her at redefinefam.com. redefinefam.com. Follow her journey and the community on Instagram at crystal_redefines_family. We believe in your healing. And if this episode has helped you, please share it with the one friend who needs to hear it. Mm-hmm. And just so you know, Crystal will be back as a co-host a couple of shows with us. So look for that and keep doing the work. And keep redefining your own life. See you real soon, guys. Bye for now. Mm.
If you're a podcast host, listen up. This one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.